I am so behind on Action Comics that I don't even know why I'm still buying it. That's how far behind I am on it. I'm not even enjoying this storyline.
I'm current. I just haven't read this week's, but I was current as of last week.
I mean, it's fine, but it's not knocking my socks off. But the fact that it's weekly is just kind of pissing me off.
The weekly is hard, and I'm not enjoying the backups in it much. I mean, the Supergirl thing is just weird.
Well, and not only is it weekly, but it's going on so fucking long. Like, how many issues do we need to resolve this one story?
Yeah.
If this was a monthly, it would be like that Philip Kennedy Johnson saga. It would be like a 2-year saga of this.
And I just didn't feel like a Phantom Zone story, so I decided to skip that one story and come back after. I'm kind of glad I did, seeing how many issues that thing has been.
Yeah. There are parts of that story that I really like, and then others I'm like, can we just move on?
Yeah, you know, agreed.
Just wrap it up.
Who's taking over Action Comics after Mark Waid? I forget.
Well, and I'm so surprised that I'm not enjoying a Mark Waid Superman story more than I am.
It is weird, right?
Yeah, it is weird.
All right, hold on. Let me look. I'm just curious while we're talking before we, even though
I'm watched, recording. Speaking of, you know, when is this thing going to end? I watched that M. Night Shyamalan trap movie with Justin Hartnett.
No, I never saw that.
God, it's terrible. It is so very bad. And I kept going, when is this going to be over? It was so bad. Oof. I mean, it was like, it was one of those movies that felt like it had multiple endings. Like, okay, they've caught him. Oh, he's escaped. Oh, they've caught him. He's escaped again. You know, it's one of those. And this happens like 3 times. And I'm like, when, please God, is this going to be over?
Well, they announced a trap too, Aaron, so I'm pretty sure it's not over. No, I'm just kidding.
It wouldn't surprise me because it has that kind of ending. And
there's a trap trilogy coming. I don't know if you knew this.
This movie is garbage.
Followed by a trap miniseries. Well,
and there's a, you know, the setup in the movie is that, you know, guy takes his daughter to a concert like Lady Gaga, right? But she's Lady Raven. And the setup is that, you know, turns out that the entire concert event is a setup to trap the serial killer that our main character turns out to be.
Oh, that movie.
Yeah.
I remember the previews.
Well, and the previews looked great. I was like, well, that looks really interesting. But one of the key problems in the movie is that I don't think M. Night Shyamalan's ever been to a concert. because it was like there were act breaks at the concert. You know, she'd sing a song. Okay, they're going to reset the stage. So everybody steps out of the arena, goes out to the, you know, to the, you know, outside the theater to, you know, shop and mingle and get more food and yada, yada. And I'm like, this is not how these things go, you know, unless the concert going experience has changed significantly.
No.
And I mean, and this is all taking place during the day. And I'm like, okay, this must be a matinee performance by, you know, Lady Raven. I don't think they do that, but okay. And, you know, and because they get home and it's still daylight. I'm like, okay. I mean, it was just a terrible movie. Just a terrible movie.
You know, speaking of movies that felt like they never end, and we'll podcast here in a second. I'm recording, so like, we'll include all this crap. I watched Carry On on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, the Bateman movie.
Yeah, it's like Jason Bateman and Taron Egerton.
Yeah, our plan is to watch that this week.
It's not terrible.
Yeah.
It's too long. Just like every streaming movie, it could probably use about 20 minutes cut out of it.
Yeah.
I've been like hardcore like binging shit lately. Yeah. I mean, probably because like TV shows are ending. So, like, I finished up Lower Decks, and that's over. I finished up Yellowstone, and that's over. I watched Carry On. You know, I've been, like, getting caught up on all my shows, all my stories. I finished Lioness Season 2.
When did the last season of Lower Decks come out?
I think it ended about a month ago. Yeah.
Okay, then I think I have a season I haven't watched yet, then.
Yeah, it's Season 5, and it's a good wrap-up. I won't spoil anything.
I haven't started Season 5 yet.
Because it's only a half hour, you know, like I think I started it Tuesday and I finished it this morning.
I find that I'm not really paying attention to things right now. I've just got so much going on. And so I want to watch it when I can pay attention and get the jokes.
Same.
Yeah. Honestly. Our background show for this week was as Sarah put on, Is It Cake? Christmas edition. I don't know if you've ever seen the show.
I haven't seen the show, but I've seen like clips of it.
It is amazing what these people can do.
Is this a baby or is it cake? Let's cut it and see.
Yeah, they make they make super realistic cakes that look like items, and people have to pick out, is it the real item or is it cake? And it is like, I'm not good at picking which is the cake.
Oh.
Definitely, because they are that realistic.
Well, is this a podcast or is it cake?
I think it's cake.
The only way to tell on the show, which would be the only way to tell here, is to take a knife and stab it.
Yeah, don't. We do not endorse stabbing your listening device at this moment. All right, let's kick this pig. We've got a Superman trailer to talk about. This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
Well, you know, we are recording the Saturday before Christmas. And let me tell you guys, I'm making a rum cake today.
Oh.
And I mention this specifically because I'm making it with Paul's rum. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I am. I mean,
that rum is probably a few years old. It's been a while since I've been to Texas, so feel free.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't go bad.
I need to start wrapping gifts today because I haven't done any of that. And that's when I find out who I forgot to buy for.
Yeah, same. I am literally at the same point. Like, I'm looking at the stack of boxes in Amazon and Target and all that stuff in my office. And I'm like, huh,
I got to
start wrapping that.
I informed the world, not buying shit for anybody this year.
How did your wife take that one?
Well, you know, we are both so just wiped out from setting up the house. Neither one of us wanted to commit the energy. And so she was wholly on board with that.
Well, you guys bought each other a house for Christmas. So there is
that. That's right. Well, and, you know, our anniversary is in February. And we're like, we'll do something cool in February. So, you know.
You guys are Valentine's Day people, aren't you?
We are enthusiasts. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
So our anniversary is actually, well, yesterday. So it is right around Christmas.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah. I scheduled and took my wife to a stained glass class.
Oh, nice.
Where we spent like 6 hours learning and doing, making stained glass sun catchers.
That's cool.
That's not cool. I'm just kidding.
Well, I was like, that took a hard turn.
Just messing. Even though 6 hours does feel like a long time.
Six hours does seem like a commitment. I gotta say, I 6 hours. Wow.
You could only spend the day just watching season five Star Trek Lower Decks.
I think I would have required a nap somewhere within that 6 hours.
It only actually took 5 hours, but you know, I made three different sun catchers. She made two.
Oh, okay.
So I won.
It's all a competition. That's the success to Wayne's marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is a competition. I like it. Well, guys, we had, you know, so this week, Mufasa, The Lion King, came out in theaters. You know, and there's a lot of big releases this Christmas in theaters. So last month, you know, starting with Thanksgiving, we had Wicked and what was the other one that came out around the time of Wicked? There's Gladiator 2. There's Wicked, Gladiator 2, Moana 2. This week we had Mufasa, The Lion King, the prequel to The Lion King. We had Sonic the Hedgehog Part 3 on Christmas.
Let's not forget that huge classical flop, Red One.
Red One, which is doing bang up business on Prime Video, which was always the intent. Like, it was always going to be, you know, limited release and then Prime Video. So it's doing great on Prime Video. Now on Christmas Day, we've got A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan, you know, biography, and we've got Nosferatu, the new Nosferatu movie, which looks pretty fantastic, getting stellar reviews.
I am excited about that.
Is that releasing in theaters?
In theaters.
Because I am interested in Nosferatu, but I got to tell you, there is literally nothing at the theaters right now that I'm interested in.
Well, you know, I do want to see most of these films that I've mentioned. I mean, I saw Wicked. I enjoyed it. I saw Red One. I enjoyed it. I have not seen Kraven. I have not seen Moana 2. I have not seen the Lord of the Rings animated movie. But I made time.
I have to confess, I want to see the Lord of the Rings animated film.
Yeah, there is nothing that could get me to pay money to see a Spider-Man without Spider-Man movie in theaters for Sony. I will watch it when it's streaming, but Kraven is not getting me to the theater.
Well, I would have seen it in the theater if it didn't get such terrible reviews.
The reviews are terrible. And which kills me because the trailer looks good. And I shared it with y'all this morning in our Instagram chat. But there was a video that somebody made with, you know, the guy dressing for the job that you want. So he dresses like Kraven in The Office. And I thought it was hysterical. It just cracked me up.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You know, I did make time to go to the movies.
And what'd you see?
I saw Werewolves.
You'll have to tell me what this is.
Yeah, so I have not heard of it.
So Werewolves is a new movie starring Frank Grillo, who I'm a fan of. And it is basically – Lou Diamond Phillips is in it. I forgot to mention that. Lou Diamond Phillips, you know. Texas boy Lou Diamond Phillips is in it. And it is basically The Purge, but with werewolves. And so the premise of the film is that a year ago, a supermoon, somehow.
Was this a moon rocketed to Earth from the dying planet Krypton and it gains powers and abilities far beyond those of normal moons under our yellow sun?
I mean, perhaps. They didn't really explain it. They just called it a supermoon. So it's very possible.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. So the supermoon has basically, for some reason, caused a mutation in a certain portion of the population. And they turned into werewolves. They don't know why. They don't know, you know, like maybe some type of, you know, lingering genetic thing or you know, something, some type of virus that has caused people to turn into werewolves last year on the supermoon for the evening, right? And so there is a supermoon happening tonight. And so, you know, this is basically, like I said, The Purge, in that they don't know that it's going to result in people turning into werewolves again, but people are planning accordingly. They're boarding up their doors. Frank Grillo plays a scientist who is trying to develop a, not so much a cure, but some type of, you know, topical ointment that will prevent the moonlight from penetrating and turning people into werewolves.
Or a bomb.
But you know, things go awry and, you know, it turns into, like, you know, surviving the night. It is very much The Purge, but with werewolves. And on top of that, you know, one of their selling points is that the werewolf effects are practical. So these are not computer generated werewolves. And I appreciated that. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I wouldn't say rush out to your theater to see it, but when it comes on to your streaming services, I recommend watching Werewolves. I think it'll actually be really popular when it hits streaming services.
Huh.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's not a Christmas movie, but it came out.
Well, you know, part of my Christmas season preparation is rewatching the Lord of the Rings, the Peter Jackson films. Mm-hmm. And Suzanne walks into the TV room the other day and I'm watching The Two Towers. And she's like, what are you watching? I said, Two Towers. Let me bring you up to speed. We're going to start about 1,000 years before the story begins.
3 hours like, later.
Stop. You know, I think I mentioned Numenor and she was out. She was out.
Out. She's already asleep.
Our Christmas watching this year has been Muppet Christmas Carol, Die Hard, and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
See, I think you got to add in The Long Kiss Goodnight as a Christmas movie.
I didn't even think about that one.
It's a fucking great Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And I think that should have been on the poster, by the way. Fucking great Christmas movie.
Fucking great Christmas.
There isn't anything better than that scene where they pull her, when they've got her on the the big wheel, you know, with the in the barn, and they pull her out of the freezing water and they roll her back, and she's just gone from, you know, drowned, water soaked school marm to crazy assassin bitch. I just love that scene. And who knew Gina Davis was an action star? She was great in that movie.
Rennie Harlan knew.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Rennie did know.
Well, I need to add that to my list. I mean, I'm not a big, like, watch a lot of Christmas movie person, but they just happen to be on. Like, people will have them on, and I'll watch bits throughout the holidays. But I don't know. For some reason, even though I don't love the movie, I've turned Krampus into an annual Christmas viewing. So I watched Krampus earlier this week, so I'm all set.
Well, I'm making that rum cake today, Paul.
Okay, well, I'm on my way.
And I got the Kraken bourbon all ready for it. So
yum 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 yum. Well, the reason I'm bringing up all these Christmas movies is because, you know, with big releases like that, you get, you know, new trailers and things like that, especially here's what's coming up next summer kind of thing. So we've gotten new trailers for certain things. There's I watched a trailer earlier this week for Den of Thieves 2, which I'm very, very excited about. But the big trailer that's coming with Mufasa is Superman. The new Superman movie from James Gunn released its first teaser trailer this week, 2-minute teaser trailer. And I think I saw that it had like 25 million views in the first 4 hours or something crazy like that.
Can we say that the drop of this week's Superman teaser trailer, it was like Jesus came back.
Yeah, 250 million views, by the way. I was off by 90%.
My Instagram feed was overwhelmed with people's response to that's my personal feed, not the IOM Geek feed. But it was overwhelmed with people responding in some way, shape, or form to the Superman trailer.
Generally to crypto.
Generally to crypto. Yeah.
Crypto also stole this trailer.
Also the elements of hope in it.
Yeah.
I people responded at such an emotional level to this trailer. And on the one hand, I'm like, wow, what a way to build your hype machine for a movie that's not coming out for 7 months, right? I mean, what a way to make sure that you are going to blow the freaking doors off when that movie hits theaters. But also, it better deliver.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost like there's a gun at James Gunn's head, you know. I mean,
talking about building hype, can we just talk about the fact they did a teaser trailer for the teaser trailer?
Yeah, they did two of them. They did.
Yeah, and James Gunn just, you know, on his feed talking about it. I mean, they marketed this thing like crazy and released merch. And released the music from the trailer that you can now stream on all the services.
They released merch of the trailer with the one big line from the trailer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, take me home.
Yeah.
Which I got to say, you know, the merch that they released is garbage. I'm not a fan of, like, literally, let's just take the poster and slap it on a shirt, and it just feels like you've just got a big sticky sticker on your shirt.
Yeah,
that's my big problem with the shirts, too, Paul. Like, I look at it, and I don't like any shirt that's a giant rectangle that looks like somebody just steam-pressed it on. Yeah, the logo shirt isn't bad.
Yeah, the logo shirt, there's a logo with, like, Superman flying in the middle that's, like, subtle and blue. That one's pretty decent.
I like the hoodie. The hoodie has the logo and has a little bit more on the back, but it blends in better. It's not a big rectangle on there.
Yeah, but that's besides the point. So the trailer came out, and I got to tell you guys, I am 50% psyched, 50% on this trailer. And I'm sure I'm in the minority on this podcast because, you know, it sounds like you guys pretty much uniformly loved it, but I have some major concerns from the trailer.
I'm curious as to what your oh no is.
Okay, so let me hit the positives first.
Okay.
Far and away, my favorite part of the trailer was Crypto.
Yes.
Like zero questions. Is Crypto just the way he looks, how white and clean and pretty and cute he is? Like Crypto, next year everyone's going to have a crypto plushie.
Yep.
You know, at home.
Next to all of my other crypto plushies at home. Yeah. I also want to say, when it comes to like the crypto stealing it, my dog's name is Crypto, and he got super confused by how many times I've said the name Crypto and I'm not talking to him this week.
Right. Crypto, take me home. Great. And then there were a number of beautiful shots in the trailer, you know, mostly featuring Superman himself, you know, fighting the kaiju and protecting the girl from a, you know, fall, like a construction accident. And, you know, the shots with Lois Lane, you know, all very well done. I liked quite a bit of that. So let me hit the 50%. Let me hit my concerns. One, and I know I'm in the minority here, but using John Williams' music, you know, for me, feels a bit like it hits me Superman Returns like. It hits me like we have this reverence for the Christopher Reeve Superman that we won't be able to get past, and it's actually going to hold back the film. Because that's what Superman Returns did, right? It was literally a sequel to the Christopher Reeves movies, and I just did not care for that. Like, do your own thing. So I have concern about the music. Two, there's like, halfway through the trailer, there's a shot of Superman walking down the street all beaten and bruised, and some dude like throws a beer can at his head. And I'm like, I don't know that your first movie is when you build in your anti-Superman public sentiment already. You know, like, that feels a little too soon for me to do that literally in the first movie of your big DC universe. So that was a concern. And three, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the Easter eggs, but like which I just found out this morning, between the reference to Gorilla Grodd, Green Lantern, Mr. Terrific, you know, all the references to the characters, it feels like there's a lot going on in this movie. It feels like, I'm struggling to see a cohesive plot thread. And I know it's a teaser, but I feel like it's just going to try to do too much and introduce too much instead of, you know, they're trying to do the Marvel Cinematic Universe thing, right? Like, Iron Man was focused. It told the story that it needed to tell, and it had just enough to get you interested in the larger universe. This feels like, you know, let's introduce the Authority in, you know, and these random characters in our first movie. It just felt a bit too much to me. So those are my concerns. Now, again, it's a 2-minute teaser for a 2.5-hour movie. They could very much be like cameos, 15-second shots in the movie, you know, things like that that don't affect the overall story. But it is I'm concerned about just how much I'm trying to jam into this movie.
Yeah. So, Paul, I'll say, being a big Superman guy, naturally, all week I was getting hit with people asking what I thought of the trailer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a given. My answer has generally been there wasn't enough to be able to judge the story at all. It is a teaser trailer. Based on leaks, we can kind of tell a lot of what the story is, but we can't judge whether the story is going to be good or not. We didn't really get dialogue or conversation between most characters. However, I absolutely loved not just Crypto, but seeing elements from the comics unapologetically on screen, like the going back to having the globe again on top of the Daily Planet, seeing the Daily Planet. The big thing with Crypto for me wasn't even just how cute and adorable and wonderful Crypto was, because he was. It was the fact that it drove home Superman's relationship with Crypto, that he is beaten and broken, and the first thing he does is whistle for his dog, and his dog comes to him immediately and, you know, takes him home. That tells me a lot about the character that we're going to get in the movie. And as long as they live up to that trailer, then I'm going to enjoy the movie. I do know, though, we were completely manipulated here. They play the new version of the, you know, John Williams music to pull our nostalgia. They gave us Crypto for half of the trailer, knowing that Crypto would have the impact that he does. You know, we are all 100% being manipulated by the trailer, which is the purpose of the trailer. It built the hype successfully because James Gunn knows how to build a fucking trailer.
Yeah,
well, we've seen that.
And, you know, I responded differently to the John Williams movies, to the John Williams music in Superman Returns. I understand that it was apishly used.
But I would have felt the same way Paul did if they just used it without changing it.
Yeah. And that was the point I was about to make, is that the fact that they had a reinterpretation and instead of it being orchestral, it was electric guitar. I loved it. It's on my playlist right now. I loved it. I was like, this is really cool. I like the feel. I like the feel that, you know, it's clearly announcing a new Superman, but with the same core value. Right. And I think that's why hope is so tangible in this trailer. I think people, you know, saw that. I'm looking at, you know, social media, and people just so responded positively to it. And I think that's got a big deal. And I think that is a extremely clever shorthand that James Gunn employed in that trailer to let you know, like, you know, we're going back to basics on this storytelling. And yeah, it's going to be new and we're going to have some different looks and yada yada. But the core things that you love about Superman, you're going to find right here.
Yeah, well, and one of my friends commented to me that they noticed that Superman is, when he crashes and he's weak and he's before Krypto gets there, it flashes to all the things he holds important. Now, I'm sure in the movie he's not going to have the thoughts of the Daily Planet and, you know, Pa Kent and all of that. But putting it the way they did in the trailer showed us mm-hmm. what is important to this Superman.
Yeah. Well,
and that was something that gave me hope, too.
And it showed you something. I feel like this was a compare and contrast to Man of Steel, particularly his darting in to save the girl during the explosion. And, you know, I'm just like, OK, we're seeing Superman save people. We're seeing Superman, you know, be a hero. And you're seeing more of that in, you know, that little bitty trailer than you did really in all of Man of Steel.
I love from any Superman, seeing the save scenes mixed in.
Yeah. And I felt like, you know, Gunn intentionally juxtaposed his trailer against what we know about the Zack Snyder Superman stories. Not saying that I didn't enjoy those, but I think this was very much kind of a tone poem, you know, saying, you know, here's what you're going to get here. You know, and when you see that Superman flag go up when someone's calling out for Superman, you know, I think that really says a lot about what this story is. Because, you know, you didn't see that kind of thing until what? Batman Versus.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's so, because that, you know, Man of Steel was still the origin, right?
True. Whereas true.
Batman Versus, you know.
But you really didn't have iconic Superman in Man of Steel. Okay. Right. And I think that's what he's setting up here, is that this is the Superman that you've been missing. And I understand your misgivings about the trailer, but boy, it hit me on all levels. It got me right between the eyes.
And, I mean, it did me too. I just had, you know, like, and I saw it like
you've got concerns.
I have concerns, right? And I like James Gunn, and he's not done. He's done his superhero work has been very consistently good. Right.
Yeah, Paul, I can say I watched the trailer probably 5 times at normal speed and once at point like 25 speed to catch all of those little scenes that pop up and just see what I was missing. I definitely have really enjoyed the trailer. I will say there is still one visual thing I don't like. I think that Nathan most Fillion of the
is Green Lantern.
That is exactly it. Yeah. Most of the Justice Society, I guess Justice League in this movie, they all look great, except Nathan Fillion looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's intentional, but it's not.
It doesn't translate well to film.
It does not.
I was like, ooh, that's not a good look. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I'm hopeful. I think it looks, you know, there's very much about it that I liked. I hope they're making the right choices. Right. I hope they're making the right choices for the launch of this universe, because, you know, as a fan, I want a DC cinematic universe to succeed. I want a Superman movie to succeed. I don't want the layman to watch this trailer and go, who the fuck are these characters? right. You know, and skip out on it because it shows Mr. Terrific and Green Lantern, stupid looking Green Lantern, instead of having cameos by Flash and Batman, you know, well, things the public understands.
That's where James Gunn is smart. What did James Gunn do with Guardians of the Galaxy when nobody knew those characters outside of his comic fans? He focused on Rocket.
Yeah.
What is he doing in this trailer? He's focusing on Crypto.
Yeah.
To get the people that don't know all of the characters with something that is cute and will get the kids in the theater.
Yeah, because I do think he's got an uphill battle. I don't think, for what it's worth, I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy actually had a bit more of a leg up because it was part of the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, whereas this is trying to launch something new with a character that has struggled to connect with modern audiences. But 250 million views in the first few hours of a trailer gives me hope, just like the Superman symbol.
You know, so I don't want him to bring Batman in as a cameo in the first movie or anything, but I kind of just want to see Batman for a second, just to punch Guy Gardner out with one punch.
Right. I want to see Bruce Wayne on TV. That's what I want. I want to see.
Yeah,
you know,
that would be a good cameo.
Yeah, but I think they're still trying to figure out the whole Batman scenario because that Robert Pattinson Batman movie, the second movie, now they're saying, you know, at earliest 2027. I'm like, just give it up. Just stop. First one was fine. Penguin was fine. But like, this is not going to work if you're going to have 5 years between movies because you can't get your stuff together. Like, just
right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not, and you don't want it to tie to this universe. Like, just give it up. Just figure out this universe, Batman, and go with that.
I agree.
Cause that's a character you can't let sit stagnant like that.
Well,
you
know, they've had some success on HBO Max or Max or whatever the hell they're calling it now. You know, with you know the Penguin spinoff, I'd maybe do that. You know, maybe do that kind of stuff. But you know, I know I'm in the minority. I did not care for the Robert Pattinson Batman, but
that was fine.
Yeah, I don't need
another one. It just didn't knock my socks off.
Yeah,
agreed. It didn't do enough different for me.
Yeah.
That, you know, it basically felt like Christopher, like a, I don't want to say a continuation, but just it basically felt like more of what we got from Christopher Nolan, just a little darker. Right. And I'm good. Like, I'm good on that type of Batman. Let's get me the Batman that fits in this DC cinematic universe.
I had three Christopher Nolan films and they were fantastic. That's all I need.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, two of them were fantastic.
I liked all three.
Same. Paul.
Yes, sir.
I believe you and I are on the same page of being longtime fans of the Challengers of the Unknown.
Oh, hell yes. Yes. I have loved these characters. You know, it's essentially, I don't even want to call it DC's version of the Fantastic Four because it never quite resonated the same way as Fantastic Four with the public. But that's kind of the intent.
Yeah. They're the Fantastic Four without powers. You know,
yeah.
I always look forward to a new run of Challengers of the Unknown. You know, I love the classic books. There was a run of Challengers of the Unknown back in the 80s. It was a miniseries that I just adore. And you know, things that have come out since have not dazzled me. Paul.
Yeah, it's inconsistent, right? Yeah. The releases, you know, the creative teams have just been relatively inconsistent.
Yeah. So, Paul.
Yes, sir.
I'm curious to know your thoughts on Challengers of the Unknown, number one that released this week.
Yeah, so this new iteration of Challengers of the Unknown is written by Christopher Cantwell, who has done a ton of work we've actually liked for Marvel. He did a Doctor Doom miniseries we quite liked. I think he was writer of Iron Man for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the artist on the book is one who's relatively unknown to me, Sean Isaacse. Mm-hmm. Isaacs, maybe. Apparently he's done a previous run on Green Arrow. And so in this Challengers of the Unknown, these are characters who are it's the same Challengers of the Unknown that we've known, but they've basically been hired, one, to maintain operations on the new Justice League Watchtower, but two, to investigate, you know, in DC All-In number one, Darkseid quote unquote died, right? And the reverberations have been felt throughout the universe. So they have been hired to investigate the impact of Darkseid's death across the universe, you know, because they, you know, the Justice League ain't dumb. They know something's going to happen. let's get ahead of it. And I, you know, and that's Mr. Terrific. And so I think that's a, I think the concept of it is very good. I gotta say, I actually really liked this book. I like that, you know, it's basically, it's kind of almost like a Brave and the Bold scenario where the Challenger of the Unknown go on missions, but they need some heavy hitters to support them, whether they need Superman in this book, you know, they're on a mission that requires Superman's strength and heat vision. Right. And, you know, and my favorite part of it is that when a superhero joins them, they get a purple Challengers of the Unknown iteration of their costume. I genuinely enjoyed this book. My issue with it is that it was just far too wordy. Like one time, you know, I turned a page and like right near the beginning of the book, and this is a Christopher Cantwell thing, so you know, this is just his writing style. But there's like a page of nothing but word balloons. It's like four or five pages in where they're introducing the characters. I'm like, oh my God. Like I almost put the book down because sometimes I just don't want that level of exposition in a book. And there certainly was a lot of talking in this book. But overall, I enjoyed the premise. I thought there was an intriguing enough, start to this storyline. So Aaron, I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I did not love this book. I don't like the fact that the Challengers of the Unknown are employees of the Justice League. I don't like that they are working the sewer systems on the space station. I feel like there should be an ops team for that, and that ops team ought not to be Challengers of the Unknown. I feel like they have been demoted.
There should be a Lower Decks. Give me the Justice League Lower Decks.
Exactly. I feel like they have been demoted in one way, shape, or form. It's frustrating to me. And I also don't like the team up aspect of it. I heard you say that. And, my thing is I want to see the Challengers solve problems on their own, you know, with the abilities of, you know, people with their skills. Right. You know, so, yeah, they don't have heat vision and telescopic vision. But how would they solve that as human beings? I feel like we spent too much time with Superman in the book, and I wanted to spend more time with the Challengers. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see the Challengers going off on individual missions, you know, meaning that, you know, one of the Challengers goes and then a superhero goes with them. I want to see the Challengers go on a mission. I want to see the entire team together. So that's what I felt frustrating about this. And lastly, what I really disliked is them putting Mr. Terrific as their boss, you know, the mission giver and the guy who's going to dispense and withhold information from them. And I'm just like, I just really don't care for the setup. Now, what I did like, I loved a little bit of a deep dive into one of the Challenger characters. And, you know, he is, I think it's Ace, the pilot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Superman reveals that Hal Jordan always wondered why the ring didn't choose Ace instead of Hal when it chose the ring bearer, right? And I thought that was really interesting, and I liked that part of the story, but I just really overall did not care for the book. Now, will I pick up issue 2? Yes, I will, because I want to see if, you know, maybe, you know, after it gets through the initial origin part of, you know, the table setting, that it doesn't switch up and give me more of what I want. But I'm just a little frustrated with, you know, their diminished role in this book, because they are secondary to the Justice League in the book, and I don't like that.
And I think, at least for me, I felt like that was because DC doesn't have faith enough in the property by itself. Mm-hmm. Without, you know, tying it to the superheroes.
I think you could have done the same kind of thing, linking them to the Justice League story, right? But instead of them coming in and, you know, being the, you know, operational staff for the Justice League space station, you bring them in as consultants and as, you know, and, you know, when Mr. Terrific tries to, you know, Bigfoot him and say, okay, I'm going to give you your orders. Like, no, you're going to tell us what the problem is, and we're going to go take care of it our way. And if we need you, we'll call you. but we'll report in as we have something to report. I really wanted to see them to be more independent.
Yeah. And maybe it'll get there. I hope the book, I hope the book maintains, it's at least popular enough that, it'll get to a second arc. Cause I think it's got potential. I mean, maybe I just love these characters, so I'm looking at it with rose colored glasses, but, I enjoyed it enough to see what the second issue does. I will certainly give it another issue, right? Yeah. But I feel like when it comes to Challenge of the Unknown, it's a concept that is like just earmarked for a creative team like Jeff Parker and Doc Shaner, or some people who can write action scientists, because that's basically what they are, right? I'm hopeful. I will continue at least for the next issue and see where things go from there.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about that was a big one, right? DC released two number ones this week that were like, hey, Paul, we know you love these franchises. We know you love them. We're going to release both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And they're both Jack Kirby creations, co-creations, let me clarify, because I think – Joe Simon maybe also created Challengers of the Unknown. I don't remember, but I know Jack Kirby was, he created it with someone. But New Gods number one came out this week. The new iteration of New Gods, written by Ram the Fifth, I think is his name, featuring very creative art by Evan Cagle. It is established where the New Gods fall in this new universe, especially with Darkseid. It's interesting because these books very much tie together in that, they're both dealing with the fallout of Darkseid's death. So, Aaron, what'd you think of New Gods number one?
I loved this book. I loved everything about this book. I loved the deep backstory we get in the opening pages of the book. It felt very Jonathan Hickman.
In the way the
typesetting was, the way, there was a lot of schematics and just felt very, John Hickman as he was writing his Secret War stuff. I love that, there's something off about Highfather.
Mm-hmm.
I love.
Before you continue, there is something, you hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
This felt like Jonathan Hickman writing New Gods.
Yeah, it did. And I don't mean to take anything away from our writer here, but that's a compliment over here, by the way, because I really like that style of cosmic storytelling that Jonathan Hickman adopts. And this feels very much of that. But it's also human. Mm-hmm. And let me until recently, I didn't think Jonathan Hickman had that tool in his toolbox. Right. I think we both commented on what a remarkable job he's doing in his current Marvel work and humanizing some of his storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's present here. The scenes between Scott Free and Orion are fantastic. It felt very Tom King, right? I love this book upside and down. And the core issue here in the book is that there has been a prophecy that a new god will be born on Earth, and this new god will call in, tremendous, tumultuous change, an apocalyptic sort of future. And so Highfather, being the good guy that he is, orders this kid's murder, so it's very biblical, that we're going to, kill the innocents. So he calls on Orion, the biological son of Darkseid, and, says, hey, you got to go kill this kid. Well, Orion knows that this is a weird order to get from Highfather, but he's loyal to Highfather, so he's going to do it. But he's going to give Scott Free 7 days to find this kid and run away. Scott Free is reluctant to do this because he's got a wife and child of his own, doesn't really want to leave them. But anyway, that's the setup for this. And I thought everything was so well executed in this book. I the artwork was fantastic. The story is fantastic. The dialogue was fantastic. I loved everything about it.
Yeah, this book is great. You know, so I think
is the kid born to just normal people, or
we don't know yet. We do see the kid at the very end of the book, but we don't know, you know, what, you know, the family situation. But I agree with you, Aaron. I thought the book was fantastic. I think it is beautifully drawn.
God, it's gorgeous.
And until you mentioned the Hickman-esque, you know, writing style of it.
Right.
I didn't, you know, I hadn't considered that. And it is very much Hickman-esque. And so, I mean, I love the New Gods. You know, again, much like Challengers of the Unknown, the volumes are inconsistent as it relates to writing them. Some people go too impersonal. Some people go too crazy. This, I think, is a nice balance of cosmic odyssey. Mm-hmm. And human interaction. And, you know, I like that we are going to focus quite a bit, obviously, on Scoffrey and Orion, at least, you know, based on this and, you know, with Scoffrey trying to protect the child. It's a very interesting concept to me. And so, yeah, I'm on board for sure.
Well, let me, so we both love New Gods, number one.
Yes.
Paul, did you read the Metamorpho preview at the back of the book?
I did not, because it pissed me off, because I thought there was more of the comic.
Ah.
And then I was like, the hell is this?
I'm not usually a fan of these previews, but I got to tell you, it got me excited about a Metamorpho book.
Oh, really? Okay.
It looks really good.
Maybe I'll give it another shot.
Written by Al Ewing with art by Steve Lieber. It looks really sharp. And
I mean, that's a good creative team, but...
It is, and I thought that the... One of the things that I'm often annoyed by is how Metamorpho's powers are depicted. And this Al Ewing's got a good take on it. And I off a couple of panels, I was like, okay, I think I'm in. So I will at least be picking up the first issue of the Metamorpho book that's coming.
Okay. So,
anyway. All right. Well, I'm going to let you boys talk about Absolute Batman number 3. But guys, before you do, I will be reading Absolute Batman number 1 this week.
Nice.
Because I signed up for DC Infinite, and they had a New Year's sale or a Christmas sale on it. So I bought 3 months worth of DC Infinite, where that book happens to exist right now. So,
which is kind of crazy to me, because that's only 2 months old.
Yeah, you are in for a treat, Aaron, because issue 1 is by far the best issue so far.
I actually have to disagree with you, Wayne.
Uh-oh.
You like this one better?
I think this issue was better for me. Now, don't get me wrong. Issue 1 was a strong, strong start. What I love most about issue 3, and I guess I'm using the word love, is that they focus a lot in this issue on Bruce Wayne and his surrogate family. In that, you know, after his dad dies, Bruce Wayne basically... Sorry, spoilers, Aaron. I think we've already talked about it, that Martha's still alive in this universe. But after his dad dies, he basically takes, you know, comfort surrounding himself with his friends. You know, and his friends are Edward Nygma, Harvey Dent,
Selina Kyle.
And so we see a lot of that interaction in this. So we get a lot of his youth where Selina Kyle, you know, has a sweet moment with him. We see.
Yeah, I love young Selina and Bruce. Like every time they're on the page, I don't even know what to call it. Their charisma together is just so wholesome.
Oh, yeah. And I got to say, my favorite part of this book, and I know I'm spoiling things for Aaron, but he'll get there, especially if he likes issue 1, is that Edward Nygma. They are establishing the Riddler of the Absolute Universe as basically Ultron, in that Edward Nygma, he's a genius, and he is creating an AI technology that, you know, obviously even in this universe he's fascinated by riddles, but he's creating this AI technology, and you know, he still hasn't called it, you know, he still hasn't given it a name, but I feel like this is a strong setup that, you know, we're going to get kind of Ultron version of Rettler in this universe. And I think that's a pretty cool idea. In fact, I think one of the things that I'm most digging about Absolute Batman, other than the homoerotic black mask who loves wrestling half naked men, is just how cool the ideas are, how different they are from any other Elseworlds iteration or alternate universe Batman that we've seen, in, you know, especially his connection to what used to be the Rogues Galleries that but are now his, you know, basically his crew. Right. It's never explicitly stated that they know he's the Batman, but he's definitely, you know, asking them questions that. And they're answering and responding that make me feel like they know, but no one ever says, you know, hey, how was it as Batman last night? They're talking about crime. They're talking about, you know, certain things that make me feel like they know, but it's never explicitly said yet.
I honestly feel like they drove him to become Batman. I kind of got that vibe as they, you know, brought him to the theater and talked about doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt like they're going to be the ones that pushed him to become Batman. I will say there was one thing I really disliked, and that was what they did to my man Bibbo.
Yeah. Bibbo does not fare well. That half naked homoerotic wrestling that I was mentioning. Poor Bibbo. But he's still alive. He's just
no. Oh,
he's alive.
No, he's not alive.
He said he'll be fine.
Yeah, he did say that, but no, he is not fine.
Yeah, poor Bibbo. This book is I'm still loving Absolute Batman, and I'm loving it more with each passing issue. Even if the issues are as a whole are not as good as the first, this issue I think was better. But I'm loving the universe that they're establishing here in the same way that I'm loving Absolute Wonder Woman, and to a lesser extent Absolute Superman. The creative ways that they're interpreting these characters, I'm really digging. The one negative thing I'll say about Absolute Batman, and I've said it before, is I need Scott Snyder to stop taking inspiration from Frank Miller. Because like the bat tank rolling down the street.
Yeah.
Those are just, you know, that's straight up a Frank Miller thing that, you know, only works in the ridiculousness of the Frank Miller writing style. Outside of that, it feels out of place. You know, it introduces a level of,
if this, you know, is supposed to be a more grounded Batman, I have a hard time accepting that giant dump truck tank driving around.
Exactly. It's hard to swallow in this universe something that ridiculous.
Especially when he's not rich.
Mm-hmm. So I need Scott Snyder to stop taking that inspiration from Frank Miller, because it is holding him back from really setting his own tone. But other than that, I thought this book was great.
So, Paul, I am really curious to hear your thoughts on G.I. Joe, because, you know, I'm not a G.I. Joe guy.
Yeah.
And I'm reading this and I don't get, say, the impact that I expect you did of the death that is confirmed in this issue.
You know, so here's the thing. I was always, you know, it's funny because Wayne is our hardcore Transformers guy. Andrew is our hardcore G.I. Joe guy. I'm the one who enjoyed both, but didn't necessarily know every character by heart, you know, things like that. Like in Transformers, obviously I knew the main characters. I knew, you know, the characters from Transformers the movie, because I love that one so much. But outside of that, like, I don't know every Decepticon. I don't know every continuity. I don't know every Autobot. I don't, you know, like, you know, your, you know, I don't, I can't name all, you know, the main Transformers characters off the top of my head. Same with G.I. Joe. You know, like, I know the main characters. I love G.I. Joe the movie. You know, I grew up with the toys and, you know, enjoyed the whole storyline. But there were so many G.I. Joes that characters like Rock and Roll, like, I don't know who that is. You know, okay. I only, you know, so like, you know, so characters like that, it's not like they killed Duke in the first issue, right? They, you know, spoilers, they killed Rock and Roll. Rock and Roll, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
In at the end of the first issue, and I was curious to see if that stuck, and it did. But on the flip side, and I'm going to say something horrible, visually, for a second, I'm like, oh, he's not dead, because his character visually kind of looks a lot like Heavy Duty. you know, it's just like a white guy with a beard. And in the heat of battle, oh, Clutch. I'm sorry. He looks a lot like Clutch. So I'm like, in the heat of battle, I was like, oh, it's. Did he just get zapped? Like, that? How did he survive that? And I'm like, oh, wait, no, he is dead. Clutch is still alive.
That was one of my issues reading issue number 2. As they're fighting Cobra, I don't know these characters yet. And I'm getting confused about who's who when they have beards and when they're, you know, I can't tell them all easily apart. I can't look at their costumes and be able to distinguish them by that.
And there's a you know, a lot of coloring choices made in this book, like, you know, like monotone coloring where, you know, everything is blue because of the lasers, or everything is pink because of the, you know, holograms, or something like that, that, you know, when it reduces the ability to say, okay, is this character brunette or blonde? You know, is this clutch or heavy duty? Because they're both basically 6 foot tall white dudes with beards.
Yeah, I've seen Cobra was incredibly impressive in this issue, and the Joes were a little lackluster, except for Duke himself.
Yeah, and I think that's
they got their butts kicked.
Yeah. So I will say, overall, I am enjoying this book. I think one of the things that's holding it back is that it is assuming, you know, it's trying to do this new universe thing, but it's assuming a connection to these characters that's informed by nostalgia, that, you know, that like you as a reader wouldn't have. Right. Yeah. So like you, if you kill a character in the first issue, who gives a shit? Like, we don't know who that character is. We've only known him for the last 15 pages. You know, that kind of thing. But I mean, I will say overall, it's very good. And for me, you hit the nail on the head. Cobra is fantastic in the book. And as far as the good guys, you've got Duke, Baroness, and now this character Risk. Those are your standouts. Everything else kind of feels like noise. At least in this first issue, though they did set up an interesting thing at the end where Clutch is now
undercover. Yeah, really, I appreciated they don't know he's undercover. Yeah. He's missing as far as they're concerned. I really enjoyed that. And I think that's going to give us some good, like, inside Cobra views.
Yeah, it's not quite the runaway first couple of issues that Transformers had, but it's well done. I'm enjoying it, but it's not like Transformers issue one, I was like, wow, this is not a wow book just yet.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm enjoying it, but I also am not attached yet, is a good way to put it. And I do wonder, does Transformers have some of that as well, of the, you know, how much is it that I'm caring about what's happening to these characters because I know the characters?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. But at the same time, we've had, for what it's worth, we had longer with some of these, because we had four miniseries leading up to this book, whereas Transformers literally launched with a number one.
That's true.
Right. So they actually had more time to establish these characters. But so many of them are new, like Cover Girl and characters like that.
Ones they established were really on the Cobra side and Duke himself.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a bad book. It's just, you know, the death of the character in issue one fell flat.
Yeah. Poor Cover Girl's not going to be on any cover anymore.
No. Yeah. She poor Cover Girl. Yeah. But it's an interesting start. I'm still, you know, it's still a good book. It's just not as runaway obvious good as Transformers was.
But, I'm sorry to hear that, because I know you were really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful. I'm still hopeful. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, for what it's worth, the Duke miniseries, and all the, every single one of the miniseries, except Destro, I think Destro was the weakest one, but every single one of the miniseries started stronger than this book is. Mm-hmm. But I'm still hopeful.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week is Christmas. Wednesday is Christmas. So
what's coming out next week? The baby Jesus.
The baby Jesus. Sweet baby Jay. So if you read your comics digitally, even digital comics, for the most part, are delayed until Thursday. Marvel's still releasing digital comics on Wednesday, but they're really only releasing one major book called Time Slide, which is, you know, every year around this time of year, Marvel releases like some book that's supposedly a preview of everything happening in the year, you know, for the upcoming year. And that's what Time Slide is. It's basically, you know, here's what's happening for the next year of Marvel. So that's coming out. But from DC Comics, their releases are coming out on Thursday, and DC is releasing a ton of stuff. They're releasing Absolute Wonder Woman number 3, Justice League Unlimited number 2. We get the latest issues of Action Comics, Detective Comics, and Superman. And from Image Comics, we get new issues of Redcoat, Geiger, and even though I keep saying I'm going to get caught up and I haven't yet, Void Rivals comes out. And the only reason I mention it is because the cover is a beautiful picture of Hot Rod. And yeah. I'm like, Damn it. No,
I will not be catching up with them, but I do pick up anytime I see that Hot, because this is the second time at least that he'll be in the book. I picked up the previous issue with him in it.
Yeah. So I will, I got to get caught up on Void Rivals. I'm probably about 6 issues behind. And they, you know, they are, I think for whatever it's worth, if you're reading these Energon Universe books, but not reading Void Rivals, I feel like Void Rivals is where they are establishing or setting up what will eventually be a crossover between the books. Because that's the book where you're getting Pythona and Hot Rod and all of those characters kind of, you know, setting up this this story arc where they're interacting. So I think that's where we're going to see, you know, the groundwork laid for next year's crossover.
Well, very good. Is it a crazy amount of DC books coming out next week?
Yeah.
They're really wanting to get in on the Christmas gift certificate business. So,
exactly.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you thought about the Superman trailer. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, Merry Christmas, guys. And hey, don't forget the 15th annual Funny Book Awards are coming in just a matter of weeks. So you can always engage us in our social media or in email and let us know your thoughts about the comics and culture of 2024.
Yes, looking forward to it. So we'll catch you next time.
Woohoo! Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas. Bye.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.